Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Paula Price Show, where you can experience revelatory teaching, get answers to your questions, and receive powerful prayer. Tune in now and get ready for an exciting time of encouragement and transformation. Welcome your host, Dr. Paula Price.
Welcome, Dr. Paula Price. It's the Paula Price Show, Tuesday, July 2nd. Dr. Price, it is already July. Can you believe it?
No, I cannot. I'm still trying to get over New Year's Day. I think the time has gone too fast. I don't know about you, but it seems like time is racing. You know, I asked God, I said, God, I think you flipped the switch somewhere, and we are racing through our years. It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. I mean, we just had our Tulsa Prophetic Forum, and it felt like we were working on it forever. And then we had a week, and then it was there.
I know. Isn't it something? And no, and now it's gone. It's over. It's gone. We're ready to work on the next one. And you know what was wonderful? It was one of the most powerful and amazing events we've ever had. It's stunning. You've been talking to me about the people on Facebook, and you've been kind of following the whole feedback on it.
Yes. The feedback, it's almost a frenzy feedback from the forum, was so impacting. I will say that we've had people who did not come call and say, oh my goodness, what is going on? What happened at this forum? I mean, people are just talking about it all over Facebook. What happened? And, you know, we have to give the proverbial you had to be there answer.
I know.
I mean, some of the moments that happened at the forum, the prophecy, the worship, the teaching, the guest ministers, the whole thing was exactly, I think it was exactly what we were going for. But most importantly, it really was what God was going for.
Exactly. And you know what's so good about it is that we learned a secret over the years. We learned how to get out of God's way.
Yes.
You know, because really, he just, to me, he took over from step one, and then he just never let go, and then sent everybody home with a hug and a kiss, a new vision, and a new prayer life, and all of that. I mean, it was just amazing. I don't know what didn't happen at the forum this year. It was astounding. One of the things that was really great, I think, that helped to me, that put it over top, is we had a number of apostles and prophets. And, you know, those mantles just ground what God is doing.
Yes.
But you were a teacher there, weren't you, this year? You got to teach again this year.
I did. And, you know, Dr. Price, teaching behind you, I tell you what, you knock over so many walls and barriers through your teaching that it's kind of easy to come behind that because you set the stage for the standard that we are going after. But I did. I taught a prophecy basics class, the foundations of prophecy, and the class did not highlight prophesying as in having people prophesy. It really emphasized in alignment with your continuum theme, continuing the continuum through prophecy and our responsibility as prophesiers and prophets, because it really is a beginner level class. So it was more emphasized for the prophesier in the gift expression of prophecy, our responsibility to follow in the line of our predecessors, our prophet predecessors, Jesus Christ himself. You know, quoted the prophets. And so how are we going to stay in the word, the mind of God, without staying in the word of God? And so the class emphasized that, and it emphasized how we as the prophetic people fall into an institution. An institution means there are levels, there's accountability, there are no independent agents. You cannot come up with something original outside of what the organization or institution stands for and expect to be taken seriously. So we talked a lot about the responsibility of prophecy in conjunction with following the prophecy continuum. I wish I had more time to teach the class because we hardly scratched the surface.
I know. But you know what? I think we're going to have to find another event for you to teach. How about that?
Oh, boy.
But you know, I tell you what.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
You feel fed up, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I have enough sense to be a little nervous about that statement.
But, you know, I tell you the truth, the thing that blessed me the most in all of this was that God watched over his word to perform it. And that's the essence of what we do as the prophets. And the other thing that blesses me is the fact that, you know, oftentimes I tell people, you know, when you go to an event that is structured to impart information, then you should be on intake mode and not output. And, you know, typically people come to prophetic events, I mean all events, to share something, their testimony, but they come to prophetic events to show what they know, and it's so ironic, they come to show what they know and to prove that they didn't really need to be there. I think that is such an interesting thing that we do. You know, I want to show off, and I spent all of this money and took this time off to prove it, but this group was not like that. This was an amazing group. They came to learn, they were challenging, they were challenged, and they are just an amazing bunch of people. I was impressed with how many pastors and leaders brought their prophetic companies and their intercessors. It was just everything was just God. So, you know, we could go on about this forever.
Yeah, well, you know, I think what happens is when apostles and prophets in particular get in those arenas, because the offices have not been validated on a global ministerial or even national ministerial front, you kind of feel like everybody has to posture and prove that they should be in this mantle and they should be in this office. And because the majority of the people who came have already studied the materials that you've written in particular, they understand what this thing is all about and know. And plus, you've been on the radio a lot, so they've heard you. And so I think they know this is really not the place to bring that.
Exactly. By the time we finished teaching, they were like, why don't I get my notebook out and my iPad, and I'm just going to take some notes and I'll take it home. It was amazing. And so I just say to everybody who didn't get a chance to join us this year, you know, get ready. We'll be posting the dates for next year's event in a little bit. Make sure you mark your calendar, because it was well worth it. And as you can see, we cannot force people to say what they don't want to say on Facebook. So God obviously approved of it. He definitely put a seal of approval on it. And because we've been talking about this is the prophet's month in our world, I like that, in our world, this is the prophet's month.
Yes.
Because this is don't you love that? If this is the prophet's month in our world, I want to talk a little bit more. We've been doing this journey on assessments. We've been following it out, and it's been wonderful. We've gotten great feedback from those of you who are listening to us week after week. And so we talked about the individual assessments, and we're going to go through that again. And we've talked about why we have them, what we want to accomplish through them. We've given you some insights on that. What I want to do, though, is talk about another arm of it. From time to time, I am going to bring out for you some aspect of the assessment to let you know that this is a real tool. When people say to us, is your assessment a personality test? Is it like the personality test, or is it like so-and-so's spiritual gift test, and on and on and on? Well, we often have to say no, and we say no because the assessments were not designed to place the people first. It was designed to create the place and to define the place that the people would enter. So our assessments are first based on the office and the institution. Then we move into the personalities, the backgrounds, the expertise that are to enter into that office. But we begin with the office, the job to be done. It is wonderful that we have personality tests. I think it's great, but personality tests are about how to work with people and how to get along with bosses and coworkers, and that's great. I think they're wonderful, but what we are trying to do here that is just a little bit different is we want to increase the competencies and the excellence and the knowledge levels and the compatibility of people who enter God's ministry, who enter God's service, whether it's a ministry or not, because the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. And so we want to increase that that compatibility, because the church has struggled over the years with people who with willing hearts and genuine love for Christ, and I mean completely diligent, hardworking people who don't fit the offices or the positions that we put them in. And as I said earlier, the church is often at a disadvantage because we are forced to work with who shows up and not always with who can do the job. And in most cases, as I've talked to people, we found that most people don't even know what the job is to be done. When you think about the prophet, when you think about the apostle especially, those positions have been vacant for ages simply because people have not been able to define them. They can't tell you why we need a prophet, why we should have an apostle. We've been taught over the recent centuries of the church that both offices are not only defunct, but anyone who attempts to enter them or revive them is heretical and, of course, out of the will of God. Now, we've heard that a lot, and unfortunately, it still circulates a little bit, but I believe, Ashley, we're making headway. What do you think?
I think we're definitely making headway. I mean, the tide is turning in the church and the body of Christ as a whole, and people are feeling the shift, but, you know, people are kind of getting scared in a good way. When things are comfortable, they don't want to change. And now that things are becoming uncomfortable in the body of Christ, they're looking for change, which is why, like you said, I mean, even with the rise of darkness and all of that, it's time for apostles and prophets to move forward, but also for people to want to get it right so that leaders don't have to deal with, like you said, what we have. You know, I think you were probably the first leader that I heard say in the church, "You are not doing me or God a favor by your sloppy service." And you're not going to do it. And no, you're not getting paid for this position. And no, that is not an excuse to bring substandard service to the Lord. We're supposed to, we walk around bragging about him being all this and all that as a God, and we bring everything but our best. And so now that I think even that tide is turning, and people are tired of having a God with a sloppy reputation.
Oh, my gosh. And you know, it's still trying to win souls. It cracks me up that we're trying to win souls to a God that that we've taught people to disrespect. And so, you know, I mean, come on, Jesus doesn't know anything. He doesn't know science. He has no idea. I mean, you know, the NASA engineer is smarter than he is. You know, we've perpetrated that myth through our behavior, through our conduct, through our refusal to even work for him, through our refusal to even be a part of his solution and our commitment to being a part of his problem. I mean, that's a real thing. And so, yeah, we have quite a bit that God is doing, and I'm excited about what he's been doing. I've been thrilled to be a part of this next thing that he's getting done. And so we've been on the journey of our organizational assessments, and we've gotten great feedback. Your responses out there have been very positive. We thank you for it, as well as thank you for joining us every week as we discuss this. But this week I'm going to talk about an aspect of the organizational assessments that I love, and that is the compass. We want to tell you about how we do what we do. In the organizational assessments, when a group finishes, we also include something called a compass, and that is a profile that lays out descriptions, examples, requirements, standards, and criteria for an organization to get on point and to produce what the assessment says they are qualified to produce, or at least they are inclined to produce. The compass has about 6 different categories. Of course, they're the fivefold, and then we have the teaching church, and then we have a blend. So we have a compass for every type of church, because ultimately, you know, you're not going to be much more than 7 churches. God has 7 churches to let us know that there are no more than 7 particular characters of churches in his kingdom. Just like there's 12 tribes divided down. If somebody decided to genuinely do their homework, and that body will not be me, but if someone decides to genuinely do their homework, I would venture to say that the Creator's wisdom would prove itself in saying that the human makeup distilled down to 12 distinct manifestations. And in that 12 distinct manifestations, somehow or another, and I'm not talking astrology because, you know, I don't deal with that. I'm talking about creator designations and creator groupings of the personalities and temperaments that he's made. And I bet you we'd find out that somehow or another they would fall in that class. Now, as I said, I'm not the person to do the job, not my call, but I do think that it would be a very interesting project for some diligent researcher who loves the Lord to do. But in any event, as we go on, the compass is intended to show the churches or the organizations who take the assessment the type of mantle that's on their group. Because when it's all said and done, leaders have a particular attraction value. We've talked about that. Leaders will attract, you know, people of their kind, people of their type. It reminds me of the old adage, birds of a feather flock together. Well, people gravitate toward their similarities, toward their uniqueness and all of those other things that go into making a group symbiotic and synergistic at the same time. So we've taken that reality. If God puts a mantle on a leader, then that mantle type is going to be what covers the organization. And it's important because even if though everyone is in the organization is not of that mantle expressly, you'll either have an inclination to that mantle type, or you'll have the destiny of it, which is the person, the destination, or you'll have an affinity. There are people who have, they just love prophets. I mean, they just love prophets. They love prophecy. They love how prophets think. They love talking about spiritual things, sharing dreams and visions. There are people who just love it. Now, they're not prophets themselves, but they're very sympathetic to a prophet. They're very affined to prophetic behavior and conduct, and they will find a church or an organization that will feed that in them. And so such organizations would draw them. Now, hard as it might be, when I first started out and I too bought into the myth that prophets couldn't pastor. And, you know, that was fun because, you know, as I grew up, I realized that, you know, nobody said that but the pastors, but that's a whole other discussion because nobody was in charge but them at the time. But I found out that when you read the Bible in the book of Acts, since we're talking about the prophetic church tonight, when you read the book of Acts, I found out that prophets were part of the pastorate of the early church, particularly the Antioch church in Acts chapter 13. And I thought about that. I said, wow. So why do we say they couldn't pastor? Then God took me to Jeremiah, who was, of course, considered to be somewhat of a pastoring or shepherding prophet. He then talked to me about Ezekiel rebuking the pastors at that time, and on we go. And so while the prophet's mantle, that dominant mantle, has its own attributes and its own characteristics that define it and that empower it, there still is that branch. Where does that mantle find its great expression? Because not everybody is at the same level, nor is everybody in the same category of prophetic ministry. We're going to talk about that later on down the line when we go through all of the different categories of prophets that are that the assessment will trigger. You know, we talked about at the event, Ashley, and you'll remember, I'm sure, we talked about at the event a number of times about the apostolic prophet. That's a great mantle to discuss. I mean, we could take a whole show talking about that, but you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put that show on Chief Prophet Tyler. We're going to let her teach that because that's very important. But do you remember, Ashley, us mentioning on several occasions the apostolic prophet?
Oh, absolutely. I think to me that's one of the most intriguing combinations and trickiest combinations of prophet because you have to be a solid prophet and exhibit enough compatibility and characteristics of the apostle to be compatible and to dispense their commission, but not fall all the way into the office of the apostle. So it's very interesting. And then whenever you talked about the prophets working with the apostles, establishing the church, that's that mantle type sharing together, seeing how that works and why apostolic prophets, excuse me, let me say this, why apostles have to find their apostolic prophets to work with them in that mission and in that assignment. But I think you have the greatest light bulbs go off in conferences and in sessions when the apostolic prophet is taught. It brings clarity. It brings definition. It brings a line somewhere in these mantles to show where they separate and where they come together. A very necessary teaching that I'm sure will go out around and around and around time and time again, because the more you get out there, the more you meet misplaced prophets that are apostolic prophets put in the office of the apostle because they exhibit elements of the apostolic or apostleship and are accidentally, inadvertently, or just somebody being enthusiastic, push them in the office of the apostle, and then their whole lives start to crumble. So I love your teaching on the apostolic prophet. I am one. And you find yourself in that because it's that hybrid office.
Oh, dare we say we have hybrid offices? Oh,
I don't know.
We'll find out from our feedback how that one goes over, huh?
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a very good point. I want to say, too, that there are far too many prophets who are genuinely apostolic prophets being elevated to the apostles' office just because. Because an apostolic prophet exhibits more than prophetics, and as a result, there isn't a cloud, there is an authority, there is an establishing feature to that office that distinguishes them from that prophet that is in the classic functions of that mantle. However, there are drawbacks and shortfalls that you must pay attention to realize that this person is meant to be a prophet alongside an apostle that can collaborate, that can think with that apostle, that can help dissect a mantle and strategize it, and all of those kinds of things, and yet not be able to bear the weight of that office, particularly when it comes to building and continuity and consistency. They get overwhelmed, and all of those things that apostles can't help but do, they find it very, very taxing on their psyches, on their time, on their natural and personal resources. So those of you who are out there, make sure you take the assessment, because it will tell you if you are indeed an apostolic prophet. And if you are, that makes you a stronger than the typical prophet, a stronger prophet, a more forceful, a more organized prophet. But in the same regard, make sure that they don't put you in the office of an apostle. Now, here is when they would be inclined to do that. They'd be inclined to do it when God decides that he wants to punch up your apostolic attributes. And so he wants to punch them up because in that organization, somebody needs to hear it. Somebody needs to understand. Somebody needs to know that you are, you know, that there is something going on there. So you'll stand there and you'll sound flat-footed apostolic. You'll break open mysteries and all of that, but God will be doing it more through you than you'll be doing it yourself. Your natural intelligence and your natural logic system will fall short. And it can't, I mean, it's not even like you plan to. You can go just so far. So you'll tear it up that night or tear it up during that event, and it is marvelous. You walk away and say, gee, God, that was great. I loved it. God, I mean, we did a great thing together. And then you'll try to repeat it, and it's not yours because it was God using that branch, that fiber, if you will, of your mantle to make a point. Then you'll go back the next time, and you know, you're going to do that flat-footed prophet thing all over again. So please, I would caution all of you out there, because it's happening far too frequently, I would caution all of you out there against letting somebody throw you into the apostolic, because, number one, it is for sure a high martial office you're going to fight. Number two, the forces that deal with it are very serious because they are committed to it not working. And number three, your whole life will go into a tailspin. Because that's normal anyway. That's how it goes. That goes with the territory. And so you have to know whether or not you are an apostolic prophet. If you are, then your job, your prayer should be for the Lord to connect you with the apostles, that the apostle that you are to collaborate with, that you are to partner with, so that you two together can get that commission out. So that apostle is going to receive that mystery. He's going to receive those revelations. They're going to make absolute perfect sense to that apostle. But that apostle, when they share it with you as that prophet, you're going to take it and you're going to hear it from an entirely different vantage point. And you're going to be able to dispense it to the rest of the leaders, the way it goes. And so by all means, please, if you haven't taken the assessment, do take it to find out where you are in God. If you are a prophet, then you want to know that. And likewise, your church. There are churches that attract prophets. This entire discussion was to lead you down to the point that we want to make tonight. There are churches that attract prophetic people. I said, there are people who love God's spirit. They love prophecy. They love revelation. They love hearing God break open the seal of people's lives and break open the future through a leader's mouth, and they can do it. They also love God's standards. Prophets, if they are, this is an interesting statement, but a prophetic leader, if that person is well-trained and well-disciplined, will have a very orderly house. And they will have, because a prophet has the unique ability to not only order natural things, but to order supernatural things as well. And that is a hallmark of a gift versus an office. Because that gift is going to be all over the place because all they need is expression. But that officer is going to order that institution for preservation's sake. And a genuine prophet wants to be concerned and will be concerned about God's reputation and God's people's safety. And so that safe guardianship is a big thing to the office. You'll always know that. And so if you are a church and you're a prophet and God told you to have a church, that, first of all, is a very difficult job. Not a lot of people are called to it because they can't stand it. And you can't stand it because the lofty elements of that prophet's mantle and the tempering aspects of that pastor have to find a balance. And so you either are built for it or you're not, because you'll end up having too much prophecy and not enough teaching and stability, or you'll end up having too much stability and suffocating that spiritual side so that the people who came to you for that are starved out. So you'll end up having one or the other as a starved group. So, again, the assessment is meant to help you through those moments. It's meant to talk you through it, to walk you through it. Part of the thing and the compass that we're talking about is that peace that you get. Now, not a lot of people want to go the distance as yet in the process, because the compass is very challenging, because it's very defining. And the church's traditional pattern, you know, the church doesn't like definition because they don't like restriction. And so we want to be all we can be, but we want to be anything we want to be at the same time. And that just can't, the two are mutually exclusive. But should you be an organization that says, you know, I want to know what kind of organization I am. I want to know what dimension of God's fivefold ministry my church stresses, because each church stresses a particular dimension. I want to know that. And I want to know how to build my people. I want to know how to select my leaders, how to recognize the gifts and talents that are in my midst, and then how to nurture and develop them for the king's purpose and for the benefit of this house. Because nothing is worse than having a leader with one massive emphasis and a congregation with another, which is very likely to happen if that leader took over that work. If you're a leader who inherited a work, you are very likely to have a mantle that is very different from the master that's on that church. And if that church is old and established, then you need to recognize that the angels of that church, the invisible powers that are meant to secure it and perpetuate it, are going to be incompatible with you. Now, that brings me to another point that I think is worth saying and worth mentioning, and I believe that further validates the assessments, and that is many people are not able to figure out what kind of mantle that's on their house, so it's difficult for them to recognize what type of leader to have. Fortunately, God is a good God, so he will just kind of step in and do the job. But what if we treated that as seriously as a secular entity would, and we did a proper job understanding not just who's good for the church because the people like them, the people respond to them, because sometimes extremely charismatic people can still not be suited to the vision and the complexion as well as the complexity of your house. So, again, it's important for you to know that as a leader, you need to be compatible with your congregation. Another time that you can have that problem is if a local church or several churches around you fold or have a split. If that happens, people are looking for where they want to go. They're just migrating according to emotions. This particular tool is effective for that as well, because you can wake up one day having one type of congregation and then turn around and you've got an entirely different kind. You don't even know what happened. You didn't have a special move to bring in the people or anything like that. So that is why we really encourage churches to do the organizational assessments, but we also encourage you to have your people take it as well, for you to know what you're drawing, what are you attracting, what level of believer are you attracting, what caliber of Christians, what type of backstory are you pulling in, because all of that speaks into what it is God called you to do and how well, how expediently you'll be able to get it done. Because that's the drawback. If you can have an influx of new members, and it's marvelous. My God, the seats are being filled. You know, the firms are increasing. It's really wonderful. And, you know, an influx brings in all of this new one. But what will it do to your house? What will it do to your vision? When all of the dust settles and all of the fuel dies down and the enthusiasm tempers, now what do you have to work with? You should know that. And when we did these assessments, the idea, the hope, the goal was that you would be able to confirm your spiritual instincts with hard data. I don't know where we got off thinking that everything had to be ethereal, intangible, soft, and unverifiable. I don't know how we got into that. And because of it, though, we've had this free-for-all where different personalities impose their perceptions and preferences on ministries and organizations with no basis in fact, no verification, and then did it and went home. They went home, they got the offering, they went home. You're left trying to figure out what just happened to my work. What if you could, as a minister, as the head of an organization, what if you could sit down and have access in some way to the qualifications and a guideline to let you know whether or not this or that type of ministry, that mantle type, is effective for your church, even ever or at the present time? You know, I often say, and I wrote it in my handbook, I often say that, you know, it's wonderful to bring in a preacher that can raise a lot of money. Great. There's nothing wrong with that. We need it. The times are hard. No judgment call there. But if your church is suffering a lot of sicknesses, if your church is suffering a lot of teen pregnancies, a lot of childhood issues, a lot of divorces and broken marriages, that mantle is not going to help. You're going to need to bring in a prophet or a minister who has experience and an anointing, a predisposition to restoring families, to restoring life, to settling marriages, to speaking into and overpowering the invisible forces of divorce and infirmity and all of that. So we have to think differently. That is why this compass is so useful, because it will tell you what type of mantle on your life. And so this particular aspect of it applies to a church or group's particular fivefold mantle. As I said to you before, the mantle on the person leading is the one that's going to cover the church. Those proclivities are going to spread out. Those inclinations, preferences, backstory, perceptions, all of that going to spread out as a blanket over that church. And given enough time, it's going to saturate the congregation to the point that they're going to say what that leader says, think the way that leader thinks, on and on and on and on. So this compass also details what you can consider to be your and congregation's collective duty and responsibility as a Christian in the local church. It is tied to helping you see your work through them and their work through your vision, through your calling. And so you get an opportunity to explore and trace through the specific calling, the different giftings and traits and talents that you have and faculties. You know, we are interested in giftings, but you do need to know the traits of people, their faculties. Can they carry it out? And are they disposed to? Or are these the people that show up to do it the Monday and Tuesday, and you can't find them Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday? They're back again on Saturday night for the big event. They're there Sunday morning for the accolades, and they're gone again. And not everybody is doing that for devious reasons. Sometimes they're just in over their heads. Sometimes people are in, and you need to be able to register who is or is not a fit as a leader, and you need to be able to discern when they're in over their head. There are people who can do something on a level one, and we want to give them level five complexity in that same field. Find out what level they peak at, because at that level is where they're going to abandon either the post or the excellence that you need or the diligence. Something is going to be abandoned if you don't know coming out the gate just how much weight this person can take. At what point would they begin to collapse? At what point would they begin to turn fussy and begin to infect the group because they're frustrated? And then when will their frustrations turn into bitterness and carping and nagging and criticism? Because all of those things are not necessarily just about a person's inward feelings or their personality. Sometimes they are expressions of frustrations that they can't voice or frustrations that are being ignored. When you're a leader, you will ignore a lot of frustrations because your need is that great. I'm trying to get this thing done, and, you know, you're the third person to do the job, and on and on and on. But what if we took our time? And in taking our time, what would happen if we found out if Brother X can do level one, level two, level three, level 10 complexity? And also, in your leadership training, may I suggest, for those of you who are listening, in your leadership training, I suggest that you give people some sort of indicator so that they'll know where one level peaks and another one begins. Because oftentimes we remove people because our instincts are telling us that this person isn't capable of doing this or that or seeing it through to the end. Because some people are great for starting, but they're not going to see it through to the end. Hence an assembly line. You know, hand it off, hand it off, hand it off. But sometimes we don't make that clear to them. They can't fathom it because the typical member of the congregation does not think that finitely or that incisively. So they don't realize that you didn't take it from them because you didn't like what they did. You took it from them because you saw that they were not going to take it to the next level. You saw where their confidence peaked, and now it started moving into incompetence, and they started becoming unfruitful. So those are some of the things that you learn when you go through this process. And it is an extensive process, but dealing with people is extensive. And trying to get a job done through people is even more extensive. And nothing is more challenging to your skill and your capabilities and to your prowess as a leader than trying to get big things done from people who you're not paying or you're not paying top dollar. You know, I often say, despite people's disparagement of ministers, I have to go on record to say I think that ministers are some of the most capable and the most incredible leaders ever, because it's easy to be a CEO of an organization and you're getting a $3 million, $2 million, $5 million package. But it's difficult to have to produce results with people that you can't pay, benefits you can't get right, the whole banana. Everything is marginal. You know, you give it, you have to be a good steward over God's funds. And it's, and for the things that we accomplish with the resistance, everybody's part-time, everybody's volunteer, you know, or most people are volunteer, most people are part-time, they're coming after their day job, you're not the priority, you're not the top person, and yet in the midst of it all, and I say this to the credit of every minister that's on the line and those who will listen to this later, we still accomplish a lot. And that's with resistance and opposition and areas that so many other entities never have to face, although everybody has them. But that type, dealing with that, you're dealing with people who are usually not skilled in what you're needing them to do, so you're imparting skills. You're dealing with people who are probably incompatible with what you need them to do, and you're motivating them, and you're coaxing them to do what doesn't come natural to them, what doesn't come easy to them, and yet we get the job done. And then you go on, and we move on and on down the line. You know, you're dealing with people who can only give you one day a week, and so your projects never get done on time, and if they do, they're so rushed that you find yourself taking in a deep breath and saying, hallelujah, thank you, Lord. But yet, in it all, this institution has kept on going. We've been producing with donations more and more often, donations than income and all of that. And yet, we get the job done. And that is what makes us unique as a professional body, a professional entity in any society at any given point, in any given era. And so, but if we can make the job a little easier, maybe if we know that so-and-so is incapable of taking any more than gathering the resources for this project. But just, sweetheart, you just gather these resources, set them up, so-and-so's going to come to do it. So-and-so can only just get it started. We'll do that. Now, I say that because we do identify grade levels in this. So this was not just a rambling conversation. We identify grade levels. So that grade one person is going to be able to gather it, gather the information, set it up, get it all set to pass it along. That grade two person is going to begin to lay out the preliminary work, but, you know, check the things, prepare it, make sure there's accuracy, and right on down till you get to the finisher. Well, you should know who the finishers are, as well as the beginners. And the beginners and the finishers are not always the same people. In your church, wouldn't it be nice to know that? In your Christian business or Christian ministry, wouldn't it be nice to know that? And if you can't get a finisher, then you have to figure out. You should know coming in the gate, okay, I'm going to do this assignment or I'm going to take on this project knowing that I'm probably going to have to finish it or I'm going to have to almost cut and paste my resources and work with this, with whatever we can get at every stage of the process, every stage of the journey. It's important that we know that. And that's one thing that we, the church, have left up to our instincts, up to the Spirit, up to prophecy, up to a lot of things. But in the end, a lot of that foresight does not have to be intangible. We can blend some tangible tools and some tangible methods and insights along with our intangible informations and revelations that we get from God and come up with a better equipped plan and equip our people better to do the job. That's one of the things that this does. We talked about benchmarks. We talked about minimums because there are baseline criteria, but there are the maximums too. And so not all masses on all church have the same capabilities or complexities. For example, that church that's meant to minister in the inner city, different level of folk. Different level of membership, different knowledge level, different education level, courage, etc. As a matter of fact, the people may lack in education or experience, they make up for in boldness and courage. That's a priceless commodity. You know, they're bold. They're going to go out there and bring in the folks and all of that. But you still need to know what you're working with. I'm probably saying that a lot because I want to leave you with that thought. You can know what you're working with. You should know what you're working with, and you should also know. You should also know how to develop it so that it's the most useful thing for you as the leader. You know, you know, one of these churches we did, for example, I'm talking about now the prophetic church, there are certain things that a prophetic church is going to do, whether we want it or not. And here's an interesting thing about a prophetic church. Because of its basic nature and its basic fundamental makeup, that the people that come are going to do what it does because they're going to fit the caliber, the classifications that I'm about to give you. Here's the deal. It's the leader's job, that prophetic pastor or that prophet pastor, as I actually call them, our hybrids, that prophet pastor. It is that person's job to not squelch these people's natural proclivities, but to create systems and create settings and trainings and environments of all sorts where they can not only exercise it, but perfect it. You know, one of the things that Ephesians said is for the perfecting of the saints. You know, perfecting is important. We're not just talking about perfecting them morally. A lot of times when we talk about for the perfecting of the saints, we're thinking moral because we must be thinking moral because church is has too high a ratio of incompetence. So it must be moral perfection that we're counting on, you know, behave yourself, you know, stay clean and all of those kinds of things. But the perfecting of the saints for the work of ministry means creating competent saints, creating competent people, knowledgeable people, capable people, people who are confident in what God has given them to do, and being able to recognize that. And in order to recognize it, you must have some sort of tool or instrument to measure it. It has to be measurable or you can't define it. You can't say somebody is rich and somebody is poor if you don't have measurements that separate the rich from the poor. You can't say someone is weak and someone is strong if you have no measurements for it. You can't go out with instinct. I mean, we do that, but it's ineffective. And so what you want to do is, particularly if you are a prophetic church, what you want to do is have ways to measure the spiritualities, which is heretofore been preached as immeasurable or unmeasurable. You want to be able to measure the spiritual aptitudes, the prophetic aptitudes and characteristics and capabilities of your people and know their limitations. You know, that person with minimal spirituality probably going to be great in your Wednesday night prayer group, probably not going to do well in the intercessors group. It probably isn't going to happen. You know, that person who has some dreams and they're on again or off again, there may be one of two reasons for that. Either they are limited in their scope, that scope of dreams and vision, or they are underdeveloped. And if you took them aside and gave them some more training and development, they may be a lot more accurate or a lot more consistent in it. But again, just because the attributes and the resources that you're drawing on in people are spiritual, they're intangible, it doesn't make them immeasurable, and it certainly doesn't make them untrainable. So God managed to do it, or how could we get it out of the Bible? We often talk about, well, you know, the prophetic, I mean, who can measure that? God apparently did. He wrote it in the book. He took what was in heaven, in the spirit, and he put it on pages. In order to do that, he had to have some definition. He had to have something to define and identified the expression that said, this is a prophet. So it is measurable, and as a church, you might want to find out what that is. For example, that prophetic church, you're going to be highly predictive. And that every time you turn around, people are going to be seeing stuff. And here's the problem. The church that isn't prophetic doesn't understand that. The Christian that isn't prophetic doesn't understand that. So they'll come to your church and they'll get all upset because they'll say, I can't say this. Somebody's always seeing something. Somebody's always got a word. Somebody always knows something. People are always in your business. That's the nature of the church. That's the people group that attracted, that leader's mantle attracted. That's the nature. What you want to do as a leader is you want to temper that. And you want to let them know just because you see it, doesn't mean you have to say it. Just because you see it, and if you are led to say it, then you need to explore the best setting, the best audience that you need to be in front of to say it. But if you're in a prophetic church, do not be surprised if they always see, because, well, that's the nature. And you're going to draw the largest amount of seers. downside of that is you're also going to draw the largest amount of people that you have to train to be as physical as they are spiritual, meaning they're going to have to work. They're going to have to not hide in the closet. Another thing a prophetic church is going to have is a ton of intercessors, people who love to pray in the spirit, who love to get out there and dance around in God and, you know, linger and stuff. They like that. You're going to have to rein that in and bring it into a place of functionality. Remember, any gift that you have that cannot be manageable, that cannot be brought in and developed and then applied to specific causes or purposes on demand, is out of control. You know, Paul talked about the spirit of the prophets being subject to the prophets. You're absolutely right. But how about this? The spirit of everything is subject to the person. Nothing is worse than having a person who sings well, singing all over the place, all out of season, all out of timing. That's just as irritating as somebody prophesying in the, under the same way. You know, just it comes up, it comes out. So there is a lot of training. Usually prophetic churches, even though they have a lot of spiritual people, they tend to bring draw people who are highly intelligent, but their intelligence is more spiritual than natural. They tend to despise natural intelligence. And so as the leader, you're going to have to level that off a little bit. You're going to have to do that. I think, Ashley, it's a good time for us to have a break. So I'll let you get your 20 seconds in, and then we can go for a break.
I only get 20 seconds?
Okay, you get 2 minutes. How's that?
Okay. Well, you said a lot of things. You said a lot of really juicy things here, Dr. Price. But overall, it's providing a safety net. This compass provides a safety net and a guidebook for each church to know exactly what type of church they are. You know, the I guess I would say maybe a downside to not being a denomination as far as prophetic churches go is you have to discover what your church is all about. When we say Presbyterian, when we say Lutheran, when we say Baptist, it's like, boom, everybody gets an image and a definition that has not changed from generation to generation to generation. And when we talk about prophetic or apostolic, we're not quite there yet. And so this provides that foundational definition, the compass does, to these church types, not just church names, but church types, to provide a uniformity that they can all begin to fall into and identify with. And so when you meet another prophetic church, now we should see some things in common here.
Yes.
Not every Presbyterian church is the same. You know, not every Catholic church is the same. Of course not. But the foundation is the same. There are elements that they all go by. There are rules that they all follow and things like that. But one thing that you said, speaking of rules, when you were talking about prophets, let me see, I told you I took good notes here. When you were talking about prophets bringing order to churches, and if a prophet is called to pastor, that church will be in order. Well, I just love, my eyebrows raised when you said that, thinking about how many people think prophetic actually equals free flow and not structure. If the prophetic is present, then there isn't any structure. I mean, most of the one of the number one things that people said about the prophetic forum is the professionalism and the structure. They loved it. God was able to move within the structure, and it wasn't just chaos to the wind and we'll strike up the band and see what happens for the next 2.5 days and, you know, hope you get your money's worth kind of thing. Yeah, that's crazy. But oftentimes, that is what is called prophetic. Mm-hmm. And you're considered unprophetic or non-prophetic if you impose, we say impose, structure on the Lord. So I like and I appreciate that you said that prophetic church is a hallmark of a genuine church. I will say, because I think this is what you were saying, so correct me if I'm wrong, a genuine church under a prophet's mantle is in order.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, the gift is not going to be in order. You do know that.
Yes, yes, and making that difference that it's that office of the prophet that sets things in order because things were set in order by the prophets. You talked about the prophets ruling Israel and all kinds of things happening with that, and I appreciated that statement One of the other things, okay, that was one of my notes. Oh, when you were talking about the assessment, going back in conversation to the apostolic prophet, I just wanted to note that the assessment does indicate if somebody is transitioning into the office of the apostle or if they're going to stay as an apostolic prophet.
Very good point. Because, and you brought up something else. I'm glad you did mention that, because the assessment will tell you if you're awakening, if you are maturing, if you are transitioning, if you are emerging into one thing to another. It is that finite. It will pinpoint where you are in your journey, and it will do it based on your answer choices. There is no handling of it. No one goes behind you and say, gee, I don't really like that, and so we'll just change it. It is your answer choices, and you're right. It will say if you are a gifting and you're, or if you're manifesting or if you're an office, because many times what you think is an office is a gift, because you put more attention on your doing than on your building or establishing. And not everybody can build or establish. As much as we may not like our bosses at work, many of them are chosen because they have a capacity or capability that is uncommon, that's exceptional among the ranks of those that are in that department. The same is true with God's prophets and his ministers, that you are, sometimes you start out, you know, this is what I think I ought to do, and so I'm doing what I see. But you don't have that drive, that gut thing that says, you know, I don't know if I'm doing this right or not. I don't know what kind of results am I going after. What kind of results am I going to yield? Those things are important. So I think that was a great point, Ashley. Come on, give me the rest of your notes, since you are being such a great student today.
Well, okay. When you were talking about bringing in that new leader into the church and how having a new leader means a new mantle, and how the sheep have one mantle under that old leader, and the new one is coming in with a new one, which is why when you were talking about that, I see more and more why it is so important to grow your own next strength out of your own congregation, grooming somebody, or even if you bring someone else in. I know people who are married to people who are taking over major ministries in the world, some of them that we all know, but it's taken years for that leader to turn over the reins and is systematically doing it, testing the compatibility of that person, because they see something in them initially when they meet them. But the long haul is something else altogether. Like you said, you can preach a fiery sermon like the person you're taking over for, but do you believe in the same core principles that they do? Do you believe in the direction that God has given that church? Sometimes a new leader may mean a new direction, but sometimes it means we need to keep going with the original mandate and not turn this thing in the middle of the ocean. And so when you talked about that, I was thinking, because we had a conversation earlier today about bringing on new, I think it was today, about bringing on new executives in corporate America and what they do. You have tests and examinations. You have interviews. You have rounds. They test you until your brain is numb to see how you handle under the pressure. Do you agree with the vision? Do you agree with the vision just when you feel good? When you're in a bad mood, are you going to change everything about the company? Are you going to sell us off to our enemies or anything like that? And how many times in the church we don't go through, some churches do, and some don't, go through the painstaking process of slowly and intentionally bringing on that right new head, so that it doesn't scare the body, first of all, and they don't start running and fleeing because everything is so radically different. I know somebody who left their church at the point of the transition. They said, you know, the church started going in a different direction, and we took that as a sign to leave. And it's very important to realize how the sheep interpret changes. Now, that's not what the church was going after, but that is how some of the sheep took it. This is not why we came here. This is our sign from God that it's time to go.
And you know what, though? I'll tell you why it's important to know that, because sheep panic. Sheep panic like you would not believe, and especially if they've been for a church a long time, because who are we kidding? People don't like changing church. If, I mean, you'll change a job, move your house, but if you can stay in your church, until you go home to be with the Lord, you know you are blessed of God.
Yes. Yes.
You know? So
I mean,
you're right. That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, I changed churches because I moved to a different state. And let me tell you what, it took the better part of a year to find your church and say, this is it. Because I told the Lord, when I find a church, I'm in it to win it. I'm not jumping around, hopping around. I'm bad at that anyway.
Yeah, you change is not your most comfortable, you know, challenge. You don't look for that.
Yeah.
But I want to go back to something else you said. You said that you were talking about, you know, prophets and how free it is. You know, the thing that we have to recognize, too, is that when we are doing the prophetic ministry thing, we have to realize if you're not going to be orderly, you should not have an institution. You shouldn't have an organization. The nature of an organization is order. The fundamental organization. See, order. See, we're in the or part. So it always stuns me that people want to have the organization, and yet they don't want order. How's that? Tell me how that works, because I don't get it. And I'm thinking, but the basic fundamental of it all is order. You got to have order. Because otherwise you don't have an organization. You have a mob. You have a crowd. You have, you know, you just a mass. You don't know what you have. But when you're a prophetic person, I think about prophetic pastors and prophets. I like to pray for them because people, if they are orderly, they're going to have to prove that all the time because people are programmed to think that prophetics equal free for all. And you're right. You know, in our events, God moves because guess what? God had a country. See, he has Israel. He's got all of them now. But let's just talk about the one he birthed. He has a country, and his country could not be crazy. So he set up order in his country through the prophet Moses. It goes hand in glove. And so, yeah, that's very, very important. We're going to go for our break, unless you have more pearls. You know, you're four pearls tonight.
You know, I have strung all of my pearls. It's a good time for a break.
Well, listen. So what we're going to do is we're going to have a break, and then we got Chief Prophet creeping on us, and we're going to let her speak into this a little bit, and then I'm going to call out, mention a couple of more attributes of the prophetic church.
All right.
Have you ever wondered, why do I hear from God? Is what happens when I pray normal? Why do I think so differently? Is my relationship with God unusual? How do I explain my experiences with God? Does anyone else experience these things? I have so many talents, but how do I find my purpose? I know I'm called to ministry, but where do I begin? These daily questions lead to one solution. Introducing the Standardized Ministry Assessments Series. What was on God's mind when He made you? Find out how our assessments can help you uncover your greatest mystery, you. Our standardized ministry assessments consist of 800 ministry-specific questions, 114 ministry-based categories, 50 ministry classifications, a comprehensive gift analysis, 5-fold office identifiers, automatic response indicators, targeted benchmark scoring, automated result interpretations, custom readiness path options, call-specific recommendations, personal ministry advisement. Is this basically a personality test? No. Your results are custom designed and not based on the traditional data used to determine your personality type or IQ. Instead, your results come from you, how you think, and what you believe, not predetermined categories into which you must loosely fit. Dr. Paula Price's nearly 25 years of research and experience see to that. How is this different from a spiritual gift test? Our assessments are not a test and assess more than just your spiritual gift, what you are good at and may be interested in doing for your church. We help you define your ministry calling, how ready you are to do it full time, the type of training you need to do it well, and the best place for you to prosper whether in or out of the church. They don't just give you a number. They give you a life plan. We offer three levels of assessments. The Ministry Assessment Questionnaire, the Prophetic Aptitude Questionnaire, the Apostolic Diagnostic. So what's your ministry IQ? Discover yours today. www.drpaulaprice.com or call 877-649-PPMG.
Okay, we are back on the Paula Price Show talking about the standardized ministry assessments and the organizational compass in how it identifies the mantle on a church and the direction that God has for them, and based on the mantle of that leader. So this is good stuff tonight, Dr. Price.
Well, I enjoy it because I think about it all the time. You know, I think about, okay, people what they need, and also empower leaders. You know, a tool like this empowers leaders. It empowers the leader. It puts the leader back in control to manage their growth, manage their leadership, manage their staff, prepare their training, predict training outcomes. I mean, come on. There is so much to be had from this. Now, Ashley, we got a couple of things. Before we do it, let me finish this thought. A compass, just for those of you who are listening, includes giving you the scope and the range of what your organization is and exists to do, for telling you the extent of your reach, what kind of breadth, all those kinds of things you can find out through this tool. It's just part of the process. Now, we have a couple of things that happened during the break. Ashley, you said we have some callers on the line. I'd love to hear from one or two of them. I also know that you have a testimony. And then I said before the break that we were going to have Chief Prophet Tyler speaking to this, because you and I both know this is her hot button. So the first thing we're going to do is find out what she has to say. When she's done, we're going to go to our caller, and then after that, you get a chance to give a testimony. How's that sound?
Wonderful. All right, Prophet Tala, are you there?
Yes. Yes, I am. Praise God. Hallelujah. Excited to be back on the call again, and definitely love talking about the organizational assessments, because I definitely believe in them and what they can really do to mold and shape a ministry and give them the identity, security in the identity that they need. Dr. Price, you often say identity is the key to destiny, and I happen to think that, you know, that is very, very true for organizations, and that the compass does provide that key. It's one thing to kind of have a general understanding of where you want your vision and your church to go. It's another thing to have a tool or the keys to actually get there, how to unlock the treasures in your people, how to unlock the resources that God gave you so that your destiny can actually manifest. It can come out of a spiritual form and actually begin to take on, you know, something natural so that it can be useful here and that it can accomplish what, you know, the reason that God gave it to you. So I think the compass really does help pastors and leaders and all types of fivefold members really get the keys to the destiny that God has given them and unlock the door to the things that God really placed in their church. Because a lot of times we don't often know all the treasures we have. As you mentioned, sometimes you're so in survival mode and you're so under the gun just to make something happen. You rarely get a chance to sit down and harvest and think about the treasures that you have on the inside of you, because you're just kind of fielding through a lot of things. But it's great to have a resource like the organizational assessments where, as you've often painted this picture in our advertisements, you can go home at night or snuggle in your favorite chair and get your cup of coffee and look at a document that will show you where your assets are and what God has truly given you and how you can use them and best harvest them and really get to where you belong. And so I love that the compass gives you that collective church job description. So you not only have a vision, but now you know this is the job description of my house, you know, based on, again, the complexity of people that God has sent us. So I just absolutely love that. I think that is a great resource and tool for leaders, again, to really get there, because we have so much, you know, so many things that give us language, but not really give us tools, not give us something that we can actually do something with. And what I love about this is that when you buy into the whole organizational thing, you get an implementation plan, because that's what we need. need the step-by-step. Often people say, that's great, prophetic words are great, but then afterwards you're still scratching your head and still praying and saying, but God, exactly how do I get there? What's the roadmap? And that compass gives them a clear and distinct roadmap.
It certainly does. And I like the fact that, again, knowing what's in your congregation, sometimes we're leaning on the wrong people or over-leaning on the available people because we have not discovered what's in the body. I cannot say how many times I've gone into a church and I'll sit there by prophetic insight, say this person can do so-and-so and so-and-so. The pastor will say no. Later on, one of my people will go and talk to that person, kind of find out they run this, they own that, and whatever. This compass will help you know the entire organizational assessment. Will help you discover the lively stones, the living stones that are sitting in your congregation that you can use, and maybe you can spread the workload and offload some of your overtaxed volunteers and overtaxed faithful workers that just never get a break. Now, that was great, a great comment. I'm glad to have you aboard. It's nice to see you jump in every now and again. That's nice.
It is. When I wanted to just say one more thing based on what you said, that I think that the compass does very well, and that has also helped leaders provide language for what they really are looking for in their people, because sometimes you kind of know what you want done but don't know how to explain it or get someone to get there. Okay, I want them to be this, I want them to do that, and you're kind of lacking the ability to kind of explain what you're going for. And what I like about this is that the compass does help leaders get that language and say, ah, yes, that's what I want, that's the outcomes I'm going for, that's what I've been trying to communicate, that's what I want to narrow in and focus on with my people.
And that is true. And in addition to being able to explain it, they also get the language they need to train the person to do it. Because many times leaders don't train because they really don't. I know that I should teach you how to do something. Not quite sure. But if we can say to develop in them, thus and so, you know, our credentialing package has a huge archive of explanations. And for outcomes and results and things like that, and some of that is drawn into this compass and into these assessments. But it is important. You know, today's time, information is plentiful. This is not back, you know, 30, 40 years where the wisdom to do something was locked up with a select few. Now it's out there. It's open. And we have this free exchange of information that allows us to share our wisdom and partner with one another. So, yes, you're absolutely right. It does give you that verbiage. We were just in a meeting not too long ago where I was talking to leaders, and I said, well, most of you, when you talk to your people, it goes something like this. You know, I need so-and-so done. The person says, well, how do I do it? I don't know. Seek God. Wait a minute. First of all, why do we need to overload God? That's number one. And number two, that doesn't help. They won't know if they're hearing God or not. If they don't know, they don't know if they're hearing you, how are they going to know if they're hearing God? And so we'll have that. Or I'm sorry, this person can't give me what I want. Well, what did you ask for? I told them what I wanted to do. Well, what does that look like? How do you sketch a picture in people's minds that instructs their behavior so that they can follow what you paint out to the letter, point for point, to produce what you want? I'm often encountering frustrated sheep who want to help their leaders, want to get it right. But they said, but you know, he never makes it plain. She never spells it out. All she says is just go do it, and then I go and do it. I think it's right, and then I'm wrong, and then I'm rebuked. I mean, all of that behavior has to do with just limited vocabulary and limited communication skills. And if you can get it printed out, if you can read it, you can say it, and you can go forward with it. So, yes. That was a great point to zero in on. All right, Ashley, do you have that testimony for us or what? Did we lose her? Hello?
Hello, I'm sorry. Were you talking to me?
Yes.
I was. You were off. I told you cannot have those coffee breaks when we're on the air.
I was surfing the listening waves to see who was out there.
Well, did we have anybody out there?
You know, it's actually an unusually shy night, but I do have somebody else that I know you will want to hear from. Prophet Adia is on the line, and she has some comments that contribute to this conversation tonight.
Oh, we're about to bubble over now, aren't we? Welcome
yes,
aboard.
Thank you, Dr. Bryce. How are you tonight?
I am fine. I almost hear you.
Oh, no. Can you hear me a little bit better now?
Yes.
I'm the prophet that's trying to get her voice back.
I know. But listen, you're better today than you were yesterday.
Yes, I know. It's coming. It's coming back. I'm so excited about what you're talking about tonight because, you know, honestly, after hearing that about the assessments, I don't know any minister or organization that wouldn't want it. You know, if you had a tool in your hands to help you put your people in the right place, doing the right things, everyone in their own stream, I just don't know any leader that wouldn't want that. You know, I think that as a church, we're desperately trying to attain that. You know, in the secular world, there's so many levels of you know, qualification processes that we put our employees through that you really have every employer, at least you should, you know, doing the thing that suits them best and serving the company the best. And I think that something like this is so valuable for churches because it enables us to place people in the right departments, doing the right things for the benefit of the entire church, and it's invaluable. I don't know how you put a value on something like this because it's something that we've needed in the ministry for a long time. So I'm excited about this getting mainstream, about this the word getting out to ministers that there's this tool that they can use that will help them put their people in the right places. I think we would see a lot less of church splitting and things going on that tear up churches from the inside out because everyone will be in their lane, and they'll be in the right lane. So this is powerful what we're doing.
It is powerful. And it also, again, when I spoke of this before, minimizes the frustration level of people who are, I love my pastor, I love my church, I want to help. I don't quite know what to do. Or, again, as I mentioned before, the frustration over being unable to express what you need as a leader, but yet you expect, you know, and oftentimes we expect as leaders more than we express what we want or what it should look like when it comes back to us. So getting tools like this, very, very powerful, very powerful. You told me I had some sharp people on the line, but if you are there and you have a question, we've covered a lot of ground for tonight, but if you have a question or a comment, please don't be shy. Feel free to let us know, and we will definitely give you the time because your feedback is important, and if this is speaking to you, we want to know. Or if we need to focus on something else that you would like to get further information or enlightenment on, then let us know. Please feel free to do so. Okay, Ashley, so where are you now? Are you there? Are you still drinking that coffee?
Can you hear me now? I'm here. I am here. I have testimonies, if you would like some testimonies.
I would love testimonies.
Okay, well, I have one in particular tonight. Based on tonight's subject matter, we have some general ones as well, but this is about the assessment for the ministries and for groups and the results and the compass. This is from Apostle Sally Cheney, whose ministry went through the assessment process several years ago. She led Praise and Worship, one of our worship leaders at the Tulsa Prophetic Forum. And she said, the assessments have offered pertinent information that has assisted me in making the most of each opportunity to identify my God-given purpose, as well as provide my church leaders with tools to help them more effectively connect to their life purpose. The experience has helped me to discover how my personality, spiritual gifts, abilities, passions, emotional intelligence, and life experiences work together to define my place, in all caps, place in life and ministry. In addition, I love the follow-up the assessments provide in making sure future education is pursued and life tracks are professionally designed to keep me accountable, responsible, advancing, and prepared to move from a gift to an office. The assessments identified each of my key leaders and allowed me to see where they were displaced in my church. also the process was identified of how each of them came into their proper calling. Of course, not everyone was happy with the results, but as the apostle of the house, I did not let that deter me from taking them out of the pastor's seat into the teacher's seat and out of the minister's seat into the layman's seat. Our church was assessed as a prophetic house transitioning into an apostolic house. The journey to get them to become a church of apostleship was short-lived, but she went on to say that it also shifted her into itinerant ministry. I testify that the assessments are an asset to any church and has certainly given me a roadmap in becoming a high-ranking kingdom officer for Jesus. This great tool is second in line to the Bible because it assisted in walking out our lives and stopped us from putting people in wrong offices because they desire to be an apostle, prophet, teacher, evangelist, or pastor. She is a witness, Dr. Price, that the assessment showed her she should actually not be over a stationary church, but should have an itinerant ministry. And that is what she transitioned into and is doing quite well.
Exactly. And isn't that an interesting thought? I think it was a great testimony that you gave because many times there are a lot of pastors out there that are frustrated. God may have told you to start your church, may have said, you know, go start this work, but you thought that he meant forever, and now you're restless or you're frustrated or you're not getting the fruit. You had a taste of going on a couple of ministry trips and found that there's a lot more responsiveness to you than in your local church. This tool will tell you not only whether or not you should forego pastoring and move into itinerant ministry, but it will also give you some idea, as a good idea, if you will, of where you should start and where you fit so that you'll go on. If you're no longer called to the pastor, then where do you go? Do you just jump out and do what you like? Well, probably not, because you would discourage your own people from doing that. So certainly you wouldn't want to do it. So those are some of the things that have come out of it. That was a great testimony. Make sure you thank her for us.
I sure will.
Now, what else do you have? You have any more?
Sure. I have some testimonies from the saints who have partaken in the training or the events. Thanks for the professionalism and integrity of how this ministry of the Lord is carried. Dr. Paula, you know that the best is yet to come, and thanks for your support all the way. Apostle James Fairbanks, he was just here at the Tulsa
mm-hmm.
Prophetic Forum. And his life was changed forever. He could not stop talking about it. It was just the power of transition and change and settlement on this event was something else.
Exactly. And again, the professionalism. Assessments are something powerful that we can always use. But they help give us information, but they're also is that it professionalism. They almost drive us to a higher level of professionalism. They kind of drive us to reach, to attain more order, and not rigidity. You know, sometimes people think structure and rigidity are synonyms. Not necessarily so. As a matter of fact, in my Microsoft Word program, when I try to get a thesaurus synonym, they'll say extreme things like, okay, rigidity and mildness. But you know, everything too extreme can be uncomfortable, can be unsettling. But that doesn't mean that the core of it was ever wrong. You know, the interesting thing about balance is that it's in the middle and it's not too much to the left or to the right. And so structure is not rigidity. And going back to the church that I'm sharing right now with them, structure is healthy because structure keeps us from going over the edge. Keeps us from wearing out our people, wearing out our ministers, keeps us from exhausting our resources or mishandling them or squandering them away because we have a focus point. And so the same thing with these assessments. You know, you can squander your human resources. You can squander your human talent. You can literally expend people to the point that they can't give God another thing. The body is littered with people who are sitting in the pew. You can't even ask them to hand you an envelope because of where they came from. They were so exhausted, so overworked, misused, that they just don't want to do anything for God again but just wait for Jesus to come. And that has to do, again, with not having structure and boundaries and limitations and also not sharing the workload. I think one of the groups that tend to get it the most are those who happen to work closest to that leader. You know, the more amenable a person is, the more work we put on them. Instead of saying, okay, here's what I do. You know, you can do this, see who you can get to do that. Sometimes you can't reach people, but sometimes their friends can. But again, you need to create a pool of competent and capable people who can make this happen. I was talking before the break, powerful stuff. I was talking before the break about some of the characteristics of the prophetic church. Another thing about them is the prophetic church tends to be bold. Prophets are outspoken. And because they're so outspoken, they get the reputation for being hard-hearted.
Uh-huh.
And for being calloused. And they're not. They're outspoken. God speaks directly. God does not, he's not superfluous. He's not going to color words. He's not going to flower words. You know, he said to us, let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. So it is not uncommon for a prophet to be not only direct, but somewhat abrupt. Now, that doesn't give them a license to be rude and crude, as many of them have manifested as being from time to time. But there is that straight talk, that yes is yes, that no is no, that's going to work, that isn't going to work, that is the Lord, that isn't the Lord. So in a prophetic church, you're going to meet a lot of outspoken people, a lot of very direct people, and that's could be healthy, but again, that puts the onus on that leader to temper that, to give people positive communication skills, to give them communications etiquette, courtesies, and politeness. Another thing that you'll find in the prophetic church is that people, that because it's a communications ministry, it's because the prophet is communications ministry, that they chatter all the time, and they're going to have to learn to listen as much as they speak. The more mature prophets are going to shut up and listen, because they want to make sure that they're not only listening to the person speaking to them, but the God in them who wants to respond. So the more you grow in God as a prophet or prophetic minister, the more you are going to improve your listening skills. And a prophet's job is to listen on more than one level, minimum two, sometimes three. You have to be good at listening so that when you respond, the answer is of the Lord. So you have to hear what this person is saying and then answer it. I want to point out at this stage of the conversation that you also want to be aware of not putting people in position just because they're prophetic. Because not everybody can carry the church. Not everybody can preserve the church, well represent the church, receive from the leader and dispense what that leader is issuing out in meetings or sessions or trainings. So, again, you need to know who can carry your work versus who can talk about it. You know, I mean, some people are very good advertisers. They just good advertisement. But that's it. Don't ask them to do anything more than advertise. So, but you're going to find that outspoken people, because the mantle itself is a direct mantle, and it's going to say what God says. And the sincere prophet that is faithful to God, knows not to add to his words and not to take away, which is why prophets and most of the classic evangelical models clash, because the evangelical model is not going to tell you things straight up like that, because their job is to woo you into the cross and into salvation. The prophet's job is to mature you for the king's glory and the king's use. So the objectives of the two groups can sometimes, if they don't clash, they can sometimes exclude one another. But again, we're talking about the prophetic church. So a prophetic church is going to attract quite a few people who are outspoken. They're communicators, and they're going to attract a lot of talkers, because that's the nature of the matter, and that's what must be nurtured. That's what must be tempered, the talkers, because to them it's just that they just sometimes it's just, you know, hear, see, and say. Sometimes they just love to hear the sound of their own voice. So you have to deal with that. A lot of evangelical churches bring out talkers. These are the people that run up to you and say hi and begin to dump their testimony. Most frustrating thing in the world. I haven't even said hi back, and you're telling me your life. I walk away, I know about you, your mother, your grandmother, who died, who lived, who's doing what to whom, and I can't even remember it, and you dumped it on me so quickly I can't even get the facts straight. But that's that whole talk thing. You know, in the, with the prophetic church, that talking is going to be about spiritual conversation. And so it's going to be about spiritual chatter. You're just going to talk about what you saw, what you didn't see, what you felt, what you didn't feel. And that evangelical church is going to be about testimony. So you're either going to be drenched in prophecy and prophetic genre or drenched in testimony. But on both sides, the church needs to become more of a listening institution instead of a talking one. And by virtue of who we are, having to share Jesus Christ, finding that balance, striking that balance is a challenge, and it's difficult all the time. But it is something that a prophetic church has got to do. You also want to make sure that you that the people you get respect your responsibility to others. Again, not seeing and saying everything that comes to mind, not charging people with evil simply because you see it in its pure, raw state. You know, truth can be raw, but it also can be tempered. You know, you can clothe truth. And so many times in a prophetic church, they don't grow because people are terrified. You're looking at me, you're in my business, and everybody's seeing and saying, see, there has to be some restraint, and not everybody should be released to just give a word just because. Because when, if you tell people, and here everybody got a word they can say it, they're not going to just wait for Sunday. They're going to be calling people, sending notes, sending texts, sending emails, and frustrating your work. And you as a leader may never know what happened. Sister so-and-so and her family may just migrate out the door, and you never know why. Never say a word. You don't know that they got hemmed up in the bathroom, hemmed up in the parking lot. Why? Because the fact of the matter is, even though your church is prophetic, your commodity, your main instrument, your message does not have to be always predicting. It doesn't have to be totally wrapped up in just telling fortunes and telling whatever. There is a lot. The prophet's job in the New Testament is to express and articulate what makes Jesus Christ who he is and what makes him who he is to the individual Christian, to the church at large, and to the world. So there's still a lot of room for teaching, a lot of room for Bible study and all of those things. But typically a prophetic church is only going to teach you about prophecy and prophesying, and that mostly outside of the scripture. You don't want to fall into that trap because that opens the door to too many other powers and divination and other arts that you can't defeat. You know, Satan can't cast out Satan. So you cannot, you have to be very careful to realize that just because you're prophetic does not mean you have to be, you have to prophesy and you have to predict all the time. You don't have to. Some of that stuff can be saved. Some of it can be archived. Some of it can be logged. There are a lot of things to do with the downloads and the prolific spiritual information and intelligence that you get. Everything has its place. Another thing about a prophetic church is that they are structured and they are, listen, they're governmental, but underdeveloped, they become very, very legalistic, very regimented. So there's, you know, there's a fine line between governing, which is managing and steering, and dictating. And they can, the prophetic churches, because of the inherent strength of that mantle, on and on and on, they can become very dictatorial, very authoritarian. And so that right on down to telling people they can't cut their hair, you know, you can't put any dye in your hair, you can't wear a pink tie, all of that kind of meddlesome stuff. It is very easy for a prophetic church to become meddlesome. And you become very meddlesome because that there is that misuse of the authority and a misunderstanding or perhaps a misconstrual of how that strength is to be used. And Paul says that our authority is for edification and not for destruction. If you're in a prophetic church, one of the, if you're a pastor of one, I'll say that, you want to shy away from getting into the people's nitty-gritty business. You have to leave something for the Holy Ghost to do. This will tell you how to do that because these words, they don't just come as a list. They give you some suggestions on what it looks like in action, what it looks like through the human experience. So you want to make sure that fight that thing of becoming very pushy, very strong-armed, you know, where people have got to do it this way and there's no other way. Prophetic leaders tend to suffocate the creativity and the initiative of their people. I've been in churches where folks can't even make a decision to turn a light switch on and off because the leader is so afraid that their authority and thus their esteem or prestige among the congregation will be lost. great leaders produce great people, and weak leaders produce terrified people. And whether we like it or not, now that was an apostolic statement, and yes, it was blunt, and yes, it was bold, and yes, it was direct, and it needed to be said. The church is too full of leaders who are creating terrified people, whose gifts and talents are not allowed to flourish, whose abilities are suffocated while they work according to just one routine and one plan. I'm telling you, If you're going to be that prophetic church, then the only thing that will outdo a prophetic church with that is an apostolic one, where the people are not allowed to grow. They're not allowed to explore their gifts and their talents. You put people in position and they can't have any initiative. Did I tell you to move that glass of water from the left to the right? Give me a break. Again, medicine. We have to fight that. It's very easy to do that because that is a misunderstanding and a misapplication of the inherent governmental mantle that goes with the office. Prophets are meant to develop God's people. They're meant to enrich God's visions, but they're meant to preserve God's holdings. But it's very easy for you to not know how to do those other things that are required of that mantle and yet use its strength and its attributes adversely against God's people, so that, you know, everything has to be a one way and one way only. Diversity is a God idea. Ingenuity and innovation comes out of the people's freedom to express themselves and to share what God is giving them. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But by all means, let us not try to make clones of the leadership. Another thing, administrative, you know, again, there's a nitpicky side to administration, but yet it's needful. Here is where we go. In the prophetic, it's very difficult for people to find how to, again, make it cement or concrete what God is saying, because God is invisible and ethereal. But let me put your heart at ease. Even though God is invisible and ethereal, when you hear God, you hear and receive from God from your physical and literal faculties. I don't care if it comes in your spirit. It won't register in your consciousness if it doesn't take some thought, some sort of intellectual form. That's how we are, God's intelligence. That's why we have the logos and we have the rhema. You know, we have his logic and we have his rhetoric. It all works together. So if you're going to have a prophetic company or you're going to be a prophetic church, there is not just your clerical administrations, your executive administrations, your operational administration, but there is a spiritual administration that you need to do to confirm the word of the Lord, to pray over it, to watch it over it, to make sure it happens, and then to let everybody know the direction we're going and keep this highly spiritual entity on course. It is important that we do that. Another aspect of a prophetic church, and that's a plus minus, because all of these are plus minus because of the nature of the mantle. And again, I'm going to go back to say, if you have a problem with structure, you shouldn't be in an organization. You should be itinerant. There should be you and two. The end. Then everybody can do the free-for-all, freestyle, change in a moment, flip here and flip there, and no one's the wiser. But if you have an organization, you have got to have a certain amount of consistency and continuity, because people don't know how to function in an unstable, erratic environment. People are accustomed to life having norms, and norms are what we do every day. Abnormal is something else. But norms are what you do every day. Think about how we feel if the sun didn't come up every day. I mean, when we have 5 days, 10 days with no sun, everybody's morose or depressed. Why? Because the consistency is the sun is supposed to shine during the day, and that's how we work. We set our clocks to it. We plan our work day. The same thing with the seasons. If you're in a four-season state or whatever, you need your seasons changing. You need to go to work every day. There are not a lot of companies that can exist with the employees changing their days every day, their work days and their work schedule every single day. Not a lot is going to get done, and ultimately you're going to have confusion. So order did not come from man. To say order, the order did not come from God, or that the prophetic is an institution of disorder, is to say God is disorderly, and nothing in nature supports that idea, nothing. Birds sing on cue. They sing at their time. You know, animals, the animals procreate right on time, same season every year, you know, twice a year or whatever. Everything about God's creation has its timing and its season, and it works almost, well, obviously, automatically. At least it seems to be automatic. And so when it doesn't happen on time, we signal a break in consistency and a break in continuity as a sign of disorder, disruption, and something is wrong. We begin to go and look for what broke order. But if you are in an environment where everything is chaotic, we start church one time, we started this way, another time we started another way. We the people sing, they don't sing, and they come here, they don't come. When you do all of that, this year we're going to have the convocation on this date, next year we'll have it in another month, and next year another, that doesn't work. Stability is a hallmark of a prophetic church if God is in charge. Instability is the mark of a prophetic church when flesh is in charge. But that's any church. So right now I'm talking about this one. Having said that, another feature of a prophetic church is judicialness. They are judging. You know, people have a problem with judgment. And I want to tell you, judgment is rendering a decision, good, bad, or ugly. The nature of the decision, that's another thing. The judgment is, I made a decision. I'm going to wear a red shirt today. I'm going to go a new route to work today. I'm having tuna fish for lunch. I'm having steak for dinner. I'm going to get to my job on time. I'm going to shop after work. Those are all decisions. Judgment is the final outcome of two or more options. Now, prophets are known for judging because that's what they do. God or not God, life or death, health or sickness, evil or righteousness. That's just it. And so you're going to have that. Now, but here's the problem. Again, we go back to the obstacle. The obstacle, drawback of this, is that we confuse criticism with judgment. And we can confuse our pet peeves with judgment. And we can confuse our preferences with judgment. And all of those will prevail where there is no objectivity. And objectivity can only happen when a person is committed to impartiality. They know what's them, what is me, I know what's me, and I know what is God. And not being able to discern God's thoughts and feelings and sentiments from our own as his vessel is what causes criticism. For example, you go to church, and you go. I've gone to churches where they say, you know, the women can't cut their hair because God doesn't like short hair. Now, that's crazy. No, you don't like short hair. You like to see long-haired women. That's fine. Don't blame it on God. And don't tell this woman she's going to hell because she wants to wear hair long. You know, because a lot of that are personal peeves and personal preferences hiding behind the mantle. And that makes for an unjust verdict. We have to be careful of that. In the prophetic church, there's a lot of picking at one another. Talk about, because everybody's a scrutinizer, so there's a lot of picking. And so we have to do a lot of training. Sensitivity training has to happen in prophetic churches. Got to have a lot of sensitivity training. Got to have a lot of opportunities for people to say, you know, that what does that do? Who does that hurt? Who is that really hurting? You know, now we're talking about morality, and we're talking about modesty. Those things are clearly defined for us in Scripture. But the other things are kind of crazy. You know, there are just certain things that we just go after. Some of the people, you're in people's homes, you're in their bedrooms, you're in their private lives. That's meddlesome. Nothing for the Holy Ghost to do. But if a church, through these assessments, we give you a plan, a roadmap, so that you can better engage your resources so that they're not being squandered on menial things and meddlesome things that have nothing to do with the vision, have nothing to do with the standard, the quality of your church, the word, the spiritual life, spiritual content, nothing to do with anything worthwhile, just the mantle acting without purpose. And a mantle acting without purpose is like a gun going off without aim. Everybody gets hit, and nobody knows why. The other point that you're going to see this church should have, again, talking about objectivity, talking about, you know, impartiality, a prophetic church ought to be, if it's well trained, very effective in settling disputes and helping people work through conflicts and helping diverse personalities and temperaments and backgrounds meld harmoniously. That should happen. You know, it tends to produce a lot of artistic people. The prophetic will call artistic people because artistic impulses are ethereal. They're very abstract. They're very instinctual. So you can have a lot of artistic people, which means you probably should have a lot of artistic things going on. Very poetic people. Why? Poetic people gravitate toward the prophetic because of the nature of the Psalms. The psalmist is poetic. So you're going to have a lot of artistic people, a lot of poetic people, and a lot of musical people. In addition to that, you're going to have a lot of trainers. Quite a few trainers will gravitate toward a prophetic church because once you communicate knowledge, you have to help people do it, understand it, act on it. A very mature prophetic church is going to be quite mediatory. They're going to be your peacemakers because they're going to know what God wants to act on and what he doesn't. The downside of a prophetic church, though, is that they're the ones that are going to kill every other church in the community because it's rivaling them. Now, they're not going to tell you it's about rivalry, but it really is. So we want to be careful about those kinds of things. How about you, Chief? Do you have any comments as we get ready to wrap this up? So I keep wondering where the team is. Who's on the line with me?
I'm here.
Okay, then we'll let you talk. How about that?
I was
all right.
She said she was muted.
Go ahead.
I think my brain is going back to some of the things that you talked about earlier, but I just love being able to discuss the prophetic church because of how the prophetic church got born, you know, as this charismatic entity that just kind of burst forth out of the denominations for obvious reasons, the lack of belief in the mantle, not thinking that exists today, you know, fears of it and all of this. So I just enjoyed you mapping out kind of a real definition and schematic for those who are going to be in the prophetic church and to help leaders know how to lead prophetic type sheep. Because they are different, and they have their own temperaments, and they have their own needs that are very specific, and they stick out a little bit like sore thumbs when they're not in an environment where there are prophetic people surrounding them. They they don't know how to deal with their needs, so they end up facing a lot of rejection and a lot of those things. But what I love about, you know, just talking about the prophetic church, I just wanted to comment on that piece because that was just I was just going through, you know, the compass and mapping out those things. It was just really, triggering those thoughts in my mind about creating, you know, through this conversation, just creating somewhat of an environment and safe place for prophetic people. And I love the fact that you're not saying that's not wrong. There's nothing wrong with them. It needs to be tempered because it's inherent to their makeup because of the type of calling that they have or gifting that's on their life. And so I just really was enjoying that today. And if I was a leader, and I am a, you know, leader of a prophetic company, but just having my own church and ministry, knowing that I'm attracting that mantle type, I would find this conversation very invaluable to me because it's one thing to know yourself and to know your mantle. It's another thing to be able to replicate yourself in your sheep and in your people and to be able to lead those in the pathway that even you're coming along as a prophet or as, you know, even an apostle. And with apostles, you know, my goodness, attracting prophets to their church, praise his name, because they don't, you know, we've been taught for years that they don't need to be even nice to prophets, you know what I mean, that they could be completely insensitive to them. So I think that this is a great conversation and dialogue for people who are in that position and need to know how to deal with their sheep. A lot of great wisdom came forth today and how to deal with the uniqueness of that mantle type and that makeup. We know a lot about pastors. We hear a lot about how pastors need to be, how teachers need to be, and how evangelists need to be. But knowing how to integrate the prophet and prophet-type sheep, or prophetic-type sheep, rather, and even intercessors, prophetic-type sheep in the mainstream of the body of Christ, I think that that's wonderful. So I wanted to just say that thought to you, you know, without my mic being on mute. Amen.
I tell you, that mute will make it seem like you fell off the grid every time, Walter.
Yeah, I know.
I wanted to say, too, when you mentioned intercessors, prophetic churches will produce intercessors. Now, I'll tell you something that a prophetic church ought to be able to do. They ought to be able to produce and train enough prophetic companies to help the other churches and prophetic intercessors to help the body of Christ. The point I want to say is the idea that an intercessor just sits home and prays is downright lazy. There's I'm telling you, there's no real model for that in Scripture. When I look at Anna, they say she came in and out of the temple. And when you look at Simeon, in and out of the temple. And these were older people. They were not the masses. To have an intercessor, all that person can do is pray. You don't know how what they're saying is going to play out in the real world experience. You don't know how it's going to happen. They don't know if their prayers are being answered or not. They don't know. You don't know what they're bringing. Whatever. Intercession is a piece of prophetic service. It is not the whole. And if you're going to tell people that all they're going to do is pray, then they need to get up, go to a job, get a paycheck, sit at a station, and pray. And they need to document what they pray, and they need to prove that it's working. And again, you need measurability. You have to have measurability. How about you, Ashley?
Well, I think the phrase that pays for me tonight is a mantle acting without purpose is like a gun going off without aim.
Amen.
And really, really, okay, see, Chief, that's another T-shirt, prophetologist for the T-shirt.
Yes.
Dr. Price is going to have a lot of T-shirts all of her sayings on it. But that statement, in a nutshell, says, These mantles can be used as weapons if they are not handled properly, especially the mouth of a prophet. And we even talked about that in my prophecy class. And, Chief, I'm sure you talked about that in Constructing the Contemporary Prophet, that a loose mouth is like a loose prophet's mouth is like a loose cannon. It's just going to blow a hole in whatever it hits without discrimination. And talking about the meddlesomeness of the tendency to be meddlesome in the prophet's church, thinking about the ebbs and flows that our ministry has had over the years and some of the things that you have driven home hardcore about that when you were developing us as prophets, teaching us the line between being incisive, being prophetic, and being meddlesome and opinionated and hiding behind your mantle to enforce things on people because it gets on your nerves and not because it is actually anything that God cares about one way or another. And the other thing, when you were talking about having the running of the mouth as a prophet, you repeatedly instill teaching us to listen when people are speaking. And how about this? Not even just like stopping your lips from moving, but slowing down your brain to actually hear what somebody is saying. As prophetic people, we have a tendency to jump to the end of what we think is a thought, and we can be wrong because, you know, somebody has a whole other thing in mind. Not realizing that you're really not paying attention because you're just kind of floating around and maybe trying to connect some prophetic dots, but not listening at the same time. So this communication skills you taught us repeatedly over the years, and it's kind of like we have to recertify every year because at every leap and stretch and growth spurt that your mantle goes through, it's almost like you have to get a grip on yourself again at every level to pull yourself together because this mantle just starts popping off in places and your senses are kind of all over the place and you have to bring that in. So just speaking very in solid terminology tonight was very helpful, like Prophet Tala said, to anybody who is either over a prophetic ministry or who is in a prophetic ministry so you know how to conduct yourself as a member of your church and to not buck up against leadership when they try and clamp down on some of that activity and bring it into order. Because we have to remember, even though we are hearing from God, kind of like Moses, whenever his siblings were cutting up, God had to remind them, I speak to him in a way you guys can't even register. And sometimes we think because we can all hear from God that we're hearing from him the same way and that he's actually saying the same thing to all of us when he is really speaking to that leader on a completely different level and a completely different platform. And the things that they are sharing with the rest of us are just a small sliver of the total picture that they're getting.
And that is the truth. That is the truth. Now, how about you? Is Mother Prophet on the line?
She's still out there.
Is she out there?
Yes. No. Yes, Dr. Price, I am on the line. And you know what? Prophet Ashley took mine. She really did. I was going to talk about the mantle without purpose. You know, I had to stop. I mean, I was like trying to write it as fast as I could so I could get the whole thing. But I love how you talked about how, you know, being overly meddlesome as a prophetic church can cause issues, you know, with over-criticizing your people, you know, getting way too involved in every single thing of their lives and end up tearing up your church. And I just think that prophetic churches, you know, we just say thank you because, that's always been that mystery. How can you get a prophetic church to grow? It almost is like there's a stigma on prophetic churches. They're not going to grow. They're not going to increase. They're not going to advance. And I think that tonight you gave some real reasons why not. You know, the tendencies that we have as prophetic people that when overblown and not put in the right perspective can cause just a real disillusionment in your people and can cause you to not be able to move forward. So, what a powerful thing. You know, I never know what to expect, Dr. Price. You know, we get on the calls and it's supposed to be about one thing, and it is, and then it's about so much more. So thank you for that. I think that you really enlightened some prophetic leaders that are on the line or those that will go back and listen to this later about how to really make it work, you know, and how to use our mantle to its fullest, but not as a tool of devastation. So I think that was powerful tonight.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. I'm sure some of our listeners will let us know what that comment did. Listen, everybody who is on the line tonight, let me know what you thought of this with Facebook. You know, I do this because I believe it's something that God wants to do to help you all, but it would be great to get your feedback. Go to my Facebook page and say, you know, this is what this said to me, and this is what it did to me or what it did for me. If you decide you want to speak on the call, Ashley's going to tell you how to. You know, you could, what is it? Can't they type it in or what is it, text us or whatever, Ashley? What is it they do?
Well, on this system, I go to them. And so
okay.
I would, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, but let us know. But if you're listening tonight, write me, inbox me at Facebook and just say, you know, that spoke to me or that didn't. Or if you have a question that you'd like me to address when we get back together again next week, don't wait until then. Text me, email, whatever we do, comment me. You know, I'm still getting the language together. Write a dictionary for prophets, trying to figure out Facebook. Okay, help me out, Lord. But in any event, please open up and share with us. We want to know. I want to give a closing piece of advice that I'm probably going to pick up on next week, and that is just because you hear something sensitive and confidential from God doesn't mean that you can violate his confidences either. Sometimes we have messed up even with God, which is why he won't talk to us any longer, because we have treated him as if he isn't a person. He's not a newspaper article. He's not a book. He's not a text, a piece of broadcasting. He's a person. And if God gives you some sensitive information, you need to be as discreet with his confidences as you are with the people you see. I think that that's probably a good way to wrap up tonight's session. I thank you all for joining us weekly. We're going to continue with the prophetic church until I'm done. And trust me, people, there's a lot more for you to learn about this church, a little here and a little there. Share this with your friends. And by all means, use this information with wisdom and with discretion. Let's not go clubbing each other. If you are a member of a prophetic church, you are not being freed in this discussion to go and disrespect your leader, to go and tell them off. If you want them to get this information, then invite them to come to my blog talk and radio show and listen to it. These things are archived. You can share it with your friends. You can send it out. I'm saying to you now, if you are a member of a prophetic church, you are not granted permission by virtue of this discussion to go and tear up your church, correct all your leaders, simply because you think you heard what I said. It would be better for you if led them to this discussion, told them how to tune in, and then let me communicate what I'm communicating. It is so much better than for you to go and usurp authority in your church or to just really fall into insubordination because you're going to tell your pastor, I don't have to do this because. So I'd like to caution you as we close out for tonight. Thank you so very much for joining in. I'm sure Ashley has some closing announcements for you. Until next week, God bless you. Be empowered.
And thank you for tuning in.
Thank you for joining us on the Paula Price Show. If you would like to attend one of Dr. Price's upcoming events, book her for your own event, purchase products, or take a ministry assessment, visit us online at www.drpaulaprice.com or by phone at 877-419-1299. If you like what you heard today, become a Paula Price Show supporter for just $15 per month. That number again is 877-419-1299 or visit us online at www.drpaulaprice.com.